Please be seated. I saw recently where Joe Garagiola died. Now, some of you will remember him. Some of you are too young to remember him. Everybody at the 8 o'clock service remembered him. He had a 30-year television career, for the most part on the Today Show. But before that, he was a catcher in the major leagues. Now, Joe didn't have a particularly successful career. He played for 9 years. He was traded 4 times. That was when there were only 8 teams in his league. And he tells the story of one night when he was catching against the St. Louis Cardinals. And the pitcher on the mound was a young, inexperienced fellow who was pitching in his very first game. And the first batter to come to the plate was Stan Musial. Now, he was one of the greatest sluggers of all time. And immediately, this youngster felt a flash of fear through his entire being. There were runners on second and third. The score was tied. And to make matters worse, it was the top of the 9th inning. Garagiola squatted behind the plate, and he signaled for the fastball. But the young pitcher shook his head no. He didn't want to throw the fastball. So Garagiola signaled for the curveball. Again, the pitcher shook his head, shook that one off as well. So Garagiola tried a third time, and he flashed the sign for a slider, the only other pitch in this youngster's repertoire. But once again, the youngster shook his head, saying he didn't want to throw that one either. Now, Garagiola was utterly confused. So he called time out, and he went to the mound. "Hey, man, what's going on?" he said. "I've called for the fastball, the curve, and the slider. That's all you've got. What do you want to do?" And I love how the young pitcher replied. He said, "Frankly, Joe, I was hoping to hold on to the ball as long as I could." In a very real way, every one of us here can identify with that young pitcher, can't we? We're up against something, and we are either literally or figuratively paralyzed with indecision and fear. And sometimes our greatest problem is finding a way to move forward. Maybe as simple as a change in our own attitudes to shake off and change whatever might be paralyzing us or holding us back. And assuming that we can identify with this young pitcher, then we certainly ought to be able to identify with this man by the pool of Bethesda. I can't say it. I've tried. Which is sometimes translated as Bethesda, which I'm going to use because that's easier to say. This gospel story begins like most of Jesus' stories. He's walking along and he comes to this pool at Bethesda. When he comes across this guy, this poor guy, who was ill and unable to walk. He's lying there with a lot of other people who were blind or crippled or even paralyzed. And I don't know if this man had a particular reputation, but we're told that Jesus saw him and knew that he'd been there for a long time. John tells us he'd been there for 38 years, which in those days was a lifetime. Apparently, this man had pinned all his hopes for being cured on one day being the first person to enter that pool when the waters were stirred up. The problem was this man was crippled, and always some more able-bodied sufferer made it to the waters before he could. That was his story anyway, and he was sticking to it. When Jesus shows up at the Bethesda pool, the man is once again lying around waiting for something that may never happen. Perhaps the healing waters of the pool were the man's best chance at being restored, or maybe he had just grown accustomed to the only life that he'd ever known. Maybe it had become comfortable just to hang out at the pool, and the very idea of being healed and making his way as a whole human being frightened him. Jesus certainly had some questions about it because he asked him point blank, "Do you want to be well?" Think about that. It seems like a pretty silly question, doesn't it? Of course the guy wants to be well. Who wouldn't? But the sick man's answer is even more bewildering. Sir, I have no one to put me in the pool. And when I try, someone gets in front of me. Now, I don't want to be a jerk, but seriously, that's the guy's answer? What a bomb. That victim mentality. No gratitude, no faith, no humility, no guts. It's all someone else's fault. He doesn't really deserve to be healed, does he? But look at Jesus' reaction. He doesn't tell him, poor guy, that's not fair. These people around you are bad people for not helping. And Jesus doesn't say, my heart goes out to you. Neither does Jesus command those around the pool to let the man get into the pool. Nor does he volunteer himself to help the man down into the waters. Jesus simply says, stand up. Stand up. Take your mat and walk. And the man gets up and walks. For 38 years, he has been frozen in place, like that young pitcher facing Stan Musial. He's absolutely comfortable with all his excuses, the ones that he makes. But at this moment, when he's given the opportunity and the power to choose a different life, something in him is willing to change. He's willing to believe that life can change, not someone else's life, but his life. He's willing to take a leap of faith. And that's precisely what it was for him. Because for him to stand up and even walk meant that he had to give up his most fundamental belief about himself and put his weight on what Jesus told him to do. Now, if nothing else, that should bring us up short. Jesus heals this guy anyway. It has nothing to do with faith in Jesus or whether he deserved it. Instead, it's about unmerited favor. We call God's grace. And it's real even when it doesn't seem fair. And every one of us here should thank God for that, because we've all been recipients of God's grace in our lives of faith over and over and over again. But perhaps the real miracle of this story was that Jesus was able to break through this man's complaints and excuses and was able to prod him into even trying to stand up. We've got to see this part. Somehow this broken man was able to leave his excuses behind and trust Jesus enough to attempt to stand. Now, of course, we could take this story literally. And if we do, it's just another nice healing story. But in John's gospel, every story has a symbolic dimension to it. So what if this story really is about you and me right here today? If it is, then it becomes more than just a healing story, and it becomes a story about being made whole. Every single one of us have felt paralyzed by something. We have felt paralyzed by grief or doubt or indecision or anxiety. We can even be paralyzed by our own certitude. And like the man at the Bethesda pool, we can feel completely immobilized. Like him, we can feel alone in a crowd, utterly empty, with seemingly no one who cares. Do you want to be made well? Well, yes and no. Some part of us likes to play the role of innocent victim, to blame the other person, to look for excuses. It's not my fault. Why me? Do you want to be made well? That question requires an honest look at ourselves, digging deep within us, trying to figure out what it is we really want, what we really need, and to sift through all the crap that keeps us from being fully alive. Deep down, we all want to love and to be loved and to know that we're not alone. Deep down, we want our lives to be about something bigger than ourselves. Deep down, we want to make a difference. But when it comes to wholeness, Jesus does not appear out of nowhere waving a magic wand. Jesus asks something of us. And what Jesus asks is more demanding, more costly. And for some, what Jesus asks of us is seemingly beyond what we believe ourselves to be capable of. Do you want to be made well? We say yes to that question every time we take a long look at ourselves, examine our motives, and come to realize that perhaps wholeness requires a change in who we are. We say yes every time we say a loving word or choose a loving act. We say yes every time our intentions are clear and in line with that kind of love. We say yes when we recognize that grace is God's to give, not ours, and it is most often given to the undeserving. We say yes when we give each other the benefit of the doubt, not knowing fully the stories which make us who we are. And we say yes when we're willing to trust the one we call Lord, who desires nothing more than wholeness for each of his beloved children. A wholeness that can require courage on our part by leaving behind all we've ever known. That's God's thing. Seeing us as we really are. Offering the truth, even when it might sting a little. Restoring that which is broken. Pursuing our healing long after we've given up. Loving us into wholeness and wanting us to be made new, to be made whole, to take up our mats and walk. God love you. Amen.